We were distracted now as the sound system came alive. A hierarch asked for the following persons to come to the front. To approach the Drummonds, where soldiers were breaking open pallet loads of military rucksacks, pre-packed and bulging. The hierarch had obviously never spoken into a sound amplification device before, but soon enough, she got the hang of it and began to call out the names of Fraz and Sewers. Slowly, uncertainly at first, those who had been called began to get up from their seats and move up the lanes between tables. Conversation paused for a little while, then resumed in an altogether different tone as people began to exclaim about it and to speculate.
"Okay," I said. "So here you are in a Lukub, in a chalk hall somewhere with all of the pickiest, most obstreperous cell leaders."
"Who are wonderful, by the way," Ayla put in.
"I can imagine," I said. "But they are all wanting to go deep on these topics. At the same moment, you are getting news of that poor woman from Antarct who sacrificed her life."
"And of what Orlo did for her," she reminded me.
And here she had to stop talking for a few moments because grief had overtaken her in an unwary moment. We watched, or pretended to watch, Avout coming back to their seats, each with a rucksack slung over one shoulder and a sort of badge or flasher hanging around the neck.
"Anyway," she said,
and paused to clear her throat, which had gone husky.
"It was the strangest thing I'd seen.
I'd expected we'd talk until dawn and never arrive at a consensus. But it was the opposite of that. We walked in with a consensus. Everyone knew that we had to make contact with the Antarctans, and that even if the seculars wouldn't allow such a thing, well, once we had turned into the anti-swarm,
what could they do to stop us?"
"Exactly."
"Leo said something about using the guide star lasers on the big telescopes to send signals."
"Yes, it's being talked about. Some might even be doing it, for all I know."
"Whose idea was that?"
She balked.
"Don't get me wrong," I assured her. "It's a brilliant idea."
"It was Orlo's idea."
"But you couldn't have talked to him."
"Orlo actually did it,"
Ayla said reluctantly, watching me closely to see how I'd react.
"From Edhar, last year. One of Saman's colleagues went up to the M&M and found the evidence."
"Evidence?"
"Orlo had programmed the GuideStar laser on the M&M to sweep out an analemma in the sky."
A week or a month ago, I'd have denied it could possibly be true, but not now.
"So Lodagir was right," I sighed.
"What he accused Orlo of at the plenary was dead on."
"Either that," Ayla said, "or he changed the past."
I didn't laugh. She continued.
"You should know, too, that Lodagir is one of this group I've been telling you about."
"Fra Erasmus of Edhar," called the voice on the speaker.
"Well," I said, "I guess I'd better go find out which cell you put me in." She shook her head.
"It's not like that. You won't know that until it's time."
"How can we meet up with our cell if we don't know who to look for?"
"If it happens, if the order goes out, your badge will come alive and tell you where to go. When you get there," Ayla said, "the other people you will see are the rest of your cell."
I shrugged.
"It seems sensible enough."
Because she had suddenly become somber, and I couldn't guess why. She lunged across the table and grabbed my hand.
"Look at me," she said.
"Look at me." When I looked at her, I saw tears in her eyes and a look on her face unlike any I'd ever seen before. Perhaps it was the same way my face had looked when I had gazed down out of the open door of the aerocraft and recognized Orlo. She was telling me something with that face that she did not have power to put in words.
"When you come back to this table, I'll be gone," she said. "If I don't see you again before it happens."
And I sensed this was a certainty in her mind.
"You have to know I made a terrible decision."
"Well, we all do, Ayla.
I should tell you about some of my recent terrible decisions." But she was already shaking me off, willing me to understand her words.
"Isn't there any way to change your mind, fix it, make amends?" I asked.
"I mean, I made a terrible decision in the way Orlo made a terrible decision before the gates of Orithena."
"Terrible," I said, "but right."
Then the tears came so hard she had to close her eyes and turn her back on me. She let go of my hand and began to totter away, shoulders hunched as if she had just been stabbed in the back.
She seemed the smallest person in the convox. Every instinct told me to run after her, put an arm around her bony shoulders. But I knew she'd break a chair over my head. I walked up to the truck and got my rucksack and my badge, a rectangular slab, like a small photomnemonic tablet that had been used to capture an image of the inside of a tomb. Then I went back to work, estimating the inertia tensor of the geometer's ship.